helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Words matter. That's why I keep referring back to dictionaries and other documents to show what the words I'm using mean. It's also why I refuse to submit to the false language that becomes so much a part of Western society today. Then I came across an article by a Dr. Marlene McMillan, who put a name to what I've been seeing: social engineering. See, the manipulation of language to get a desired end is nothing new. You've probably heard that history is written by the victors. What you may not know is that political correctness has many parallels with another ideology, Marxism. So before we let others manipulate the language to promote their agendas, perhaps we should take a very close look at what these euphemisms actually mean and are actually trying to do. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach rising generation to be free. I am so glad to be back with you today. I am back at my home base after spending the better part of a week on the road, dealing with some family business. Yes, everyone is okay. I'm glad to report, but I'm also very glad to be here where I have all my goodies set up and I can continue to talk with you about today, well, social engineering. Now, the article I'm referring to I found it in News with Views. It's called Social Engineering: How You Are Being Deceived and Manipulated by a Dr. Marlene McMillan. By the way, I have sent out an invitation to Dr. McMillan to see if she'd be willing to join us here on the Constitution Study to discuss some of her ideas, because I thought they were very interesting, because she's talking about this idea of social engineering. She said, instead of guns, the weapon of choice is words. The language of culture change is what is commonly called political correctness. The process of getting someone to embrace the new language and thought patterns of postmodernism is called the dialectic process. You don't have to understand these processes to see its results in the new social order being thrust upon us. Now, that's a good opening paragraph. That's a good opening, I should say. And I've seen it. Like I said, she put words to something I had been seeing. And it's this idea of you change the language, and then you make statements against those, especially public figures, to shame them into using the new language and making public apologies for not speaking correctly. And this verbal deception, well, it's its own form of oppression. It's a violation of the freedom of speech, but it's an oppression because it's designed to move people. As she says, the victims are captured not behind the gulag, but in an invisible net of fear of offense. Social engineers constantly talk about offense. Forgiveness is not in their construct. And boy, we see it everywhere. Or at least I do, and I'm pretty sure you do as well. She went on to say, social engineers want everyone to speak politically correct. In political correctness, only certain arguments are allowed. Many important topics of discussion are off the table. Whenever a fact that disagrees with their narrative is brought forward, it is ridiculed as being old-fashioned, something we have moved past, or no one believes that anymore. They want to remake the world in their own image and are rarely asked, who put you in charge? I hope you see why I want to have a nice long conversation with her, because upon reading this article, and I suggest you do as well. In fact, I'm going to put a link in the show page. You'll see a link for this article in the text. I saw so much of what was going on, and I saw it explained, and it really got me to dig into this idea of political correctness and its origins and how Marxist it is. The idea of people claiming the authority to reinvent words. What do words mean? And in many cases, just reuse them to meet their own agenda. Or I guess more accurately, to promote their own agenda. See, there's another interesting article. This one came out of the Daily Wire. where we have a doctor who's acting as a whistleblower on the corruption of the medical field. What do I mean? Well, what's interesting is this person looks back and says, you know what? In 2020, in the scare over COVID, a lot of the guardrails around medicine, well, we pulled them out of the way. We didn't bother. You see, we used to have this very interesting thing. Doctors used to work under what was called professional societies that governed their practices. They had peer review studies and evidence, and there was stuff that you had to show before you were allowed in these professional societies to bring this information forward. Like you'd observe something, you'd write a paper, it'd be peer reviewed. Maybe you'd have to modify the paper because other people saw things that maybe weren't correct or they couldn't reproduce it. And then this reviewed process would then get disseminated to the rest of us. So you knew, you had a fair sense that somebody had looked at this, somebody had sanity checked this before it hit the news. And even then, of course, caveat emptor, you had to be careful. There's a lot of stuff floating around there. But with COVID, that all disappeared. We completely forgot about these medical ethics. To get rid of the idea that, you know, well, before we start saying people should social distance or wear masks or we should lock things down or issue emergency use, there should be evidence that it's safe, evidence that it's effective, actual, I don't know, proof. And we did away with it. I was told I wanted to kill grandma because I pointed out masks don't work. And I could prove that you don't believe masks work because you don't trust the mask you're wearing. You want me to wear a mask as well, as if my mask is going to make your mask work. But that became so much of medical society as a whole. And now, you know, then we had the lockdowns and the social distancing and of course, the emergency use authorization. We basically threw all scientific knowledge out to rush to market a product that had not been safety tested, that had not been tested for efficacy, that where they broke all the rules about testing and informed consent, and we shoved this down people's throat. We had governments and businesses, even individuals and families, enforcing you and pressuring you to take an untested drug on the theory that it would stop the spread, when it had proven not only did it not stop the spread, but it could be very dangerous to people in certain situations. Situations, by the way, we didn't know about because, well, it never went through the proper safety testing. Now, that was bad enough. But now we're seeing that, hey, now that we've basically thrown science to the side, we've thrown it to the ditch, it doesn't matter anymore. We're seeing this spread like the proverbial wildfire. Now, the current fad du jour is puberty blockers. The idea that if a child shows anything other than a stereotypical interest, right, then they must be transsexual. And the one thing we must do, or they're all going to go out and kill themselves, is put them on these puberty blockers. Has anybody actually tested to see if these puberty blockers are actually safe? Because according to this doctor, what the puberty blocker does is it shuts down the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus basically controls all the hormones in your body. It's the hormone, your whole hormone structure, not just your sexual development, your emotions, your fight or flight response, everything. He made an interesting point. He says, it's this system that allows you to stand in awe of the beauty of a sunset, or to hear the sound of orchestral music and stop whatever you're doing and want to listen. And I always think that if someone were to ask me, where is it that you look for that divine spark in each individual? I would say that it would be somewhere between the inner chamber, which is the Greek derivation of the term hypothalamus. To shut down that system is to shut down what makes us human. Now, here's what's interesting. There's been a lot of talk lately, and I agree, about these puberty blockers because they have long-term impact. This is not a short-term, oh, you stop taking and everything goes back to normal. We talk about chemical castration. Many of these puberty blockers are part of a chemical castration protocol. But I have to wonder, will these puberty blockers make us emotionally castrated? If this doctor is correct, and it's the hypothalamus that we're messing with that helps us to see the beauty of a sunset or to want to listen to beautiful music, is it also what lets us see in awe the creation of another human being? And what happens when we shut that down? What happens when we take away, do we take away what makes us human? Our ability to relate to other individuals and see a value in them. Are we truly turning these young people into emotional automatons? We don't know, because we haven't tested, because we've taken the guardrails off and simply run forward under the politically correct nonsense that when I was a kid, you know, if a boy was playing with a doll, it was considered a little weird. Well, unless, of course, it was a G.I. Joe, right? G.I. Joe's not a doll. It's an action figure. I remember that, those times. And I also remember people saying, listen, who cares if he plays with dolls? Leave him alone. He'll grow up and he'll be normal. You don't turn a kid gay because they play with dolls. We've lost that. Now, if a kid picks up a doll, if a young boy picks up a doll, a child in first or second grade in school picks up a doll to play with, suddenly he's transgender, put him in a dress, give him a girl's name, and whatever you do, don't tell their parents, because we've got to manipulate the language. We've got to manipulate the language. I remember when gay used to mean happy. Not anymore. I remember when, you know, man, woman, these made sense. And they're trying to change that. And the interesting thing is they try to get us to change it for them. They try to bully and intimidate us into using this language. It's why I refuse to refer to Leah Thomas as a girl. He is a boy. Period. End of story. Dylan Mulvaney is a boy. He is a man. He's confused. He's warped. He's twisted. But he's still a man. And the fact that I refuse to comply with the coercion to destroy our language, like referring to an individual with a plural pronoun. Sure, people pick on, you know, people call me names. I don't care. You know, it's not that it's not hurtful, but I should say maybe I care about something else much, much more. I care about the country I'm leaving to my daughter and her future. What future does she have if you can't tell the difference between a boy and a girl? If men are allowed in women's locker rooms and women are allowed in men's restrooms, what does that say about all of us? We can't understand this most basic concept. It's also why I love when somebody knows this. They made a point of it to me. You know, we spend a whole month celebrating sexual perversion. LGBTQI+, whatever you, LMNOP, MICKEY, KUI, whatever. That whole nonsense. It's all about sexual deviancy. And we spend a month celebrating it. Yet we can hardly find time during a single day to remember those men and women who fought and died to protect our rights, and the Constitution that's supposed to help us defend those rights. Because we've allowed others to bully us into giving up the language. That's the interesting thing. They didn't take it from us. We simply complied with their insanity, because we were more afraid of being called old-fashioned, on the wrong side of history, than of actually being right. Now, talking about the LGBTQ LMNOP crowd, I've got some more stuff to talk about, but I want to take a break first. Before I do, though, you know, I'm still doing my boot camp. It's coming this Saturday, July 1st. If you're in Middle Tennessee and you can make it to Shelbyville, I would love to see you there. But if not, keep your eyes out. It will be on the website, constitutionstudy.com, as soon as I get the video edited and put together for you to watch. Now, if you want to be notified, well, go to the website, constitutionstudy.com, sign up for one of my mailing lists. It'll be in my newsletter. It'll be in my insider update. You can even have me email you the latest, my latest articles. And actually, I've been working on an update to the website to make some of that hopefully easier to use. So again, check it out, constitutionstudy.com. Now, I mentioned at the opening that I just got back from a trip. I spent the better part of a week on the road. I was down in Florida. And you know, one thing before I left, I threw in my bag some Immune Super Boost, because I don't know about you, but when I travel, it seems like I get sick easier. Maybe it's because I'm running around too much and I get run down. So I make sure to throw these in my bag. These Immune Super Boost combines over a dozen immune supplements into one travel ready gel pack. It supports my immune system on the go, and it's easy to use. It all comes from Healthy Cell, a leading innovator in supplements designed to work at the cellular level to help keep you healthy. Now, you are an America Out Loud listener, so that means you get 25% off your first order if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So please go to healthycell.com. Look at all their great products. They've got a lot of products. I use several of them. Immune Super Boost is one of them. But put them in your cart and make sure you use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud, and as a thank you, well, you get 25% off your first order.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body. And now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. And today, well, I'm asking a question. Are we being socially engineered? And I talked in the first segment about the idea that Dr. McMillan's paper or her article and the idea of social engineering and political correctness and seeing how it's manipulated and changed us. Well, let me take a look at some examples that I've pulled from the news. See, apparently workers at 150 different Starbucks locations or more, well, they went on strike. Now, why did they go on strike? Well, they allege that Starbucks bowed to pressure to remove Pride Month decorations, according to the Starbucks Workers United Union. Now, the union accused Starbucks of preventing stores from putting up Pride decorations and then listed several labor-related complaints that the union claims will disproportionately impact LGBT employees. At least that's the press release. Now, Starbucks denied making any change to its store decoration policies. Said we haven't done anything. We haven't changed anything. And they accused the union of spreading false information. In fact, they boast that the company actually has a line of Pride merchandise designed by an LGBT artist, and they still fly the Pride flag over their flagship store, I think in Seattle. Do you see the social engineering here? See, all it took was an accusation that a business known for its support for these LGBT groups decided they weren't going to promote Pride Month, or they were going to put up, weren't going to allow certain decorations to go up. And employees at 150 locations were prepared to strike because these stores didn't want to put up Pride memorabilia. Maybe there was specific stuff they didn't want to put up. Let's face it, a lot of this Pride nonsense is pornographic. But you see the manipulation. She's no longer, you're allowed to have Pride. We will let you have Pride. No, you must endorse the Pride. You must wave your Pride flag. Or what? Why am I having images of the Hitler Youth waving their flag saying we have to be, or maybe it's the Red Octoberists, or what was it, the young people, you had to wave your flag. If you didn't wave your flag, you weren't part of us and you had to be taken care of. Now listen, Starbucks is rather known for being, we'll call them a progressive proponent, but I have to see the mere suggestion that Starbucks was not going to put up, but was going to prevent certain Pride decorations from going up was enough to get these employees to react. And then look at what Starbucks does. Right? They immediately put out a press release. They deny any charges. They accuse the union of spreading false information. But that's not it. It's not simply that they claim the union is lying about them. They say, look at all that we've done. See, we are good LGBT activists. We have a whole line of merchandise. It's Pride merchandise. And oh, by the way, it was designed by LGBT artists. Don't you see what they're doing here? You've got the union and the employees using strikes and threats of strikes to manipulate. You have the company, which is already pretty pro-LGBT, saying, look, we did this whole thing. And they were done by LGBT. It's not even enough that we created Pride merchandise. No, we employed LGBT artists to do it. They're running scared. Now listen, I hope people are proud of who they are. Well, unless, of course, they're the bullies. Is the union bullying Starbucks? Is the Starbucks just corporation now? Just, well, we're going to support all this, even if it may be dangerous, even if there may be some in these movements that have an agenda that well, might be dangerous. Well, like this one here. Now, I don't know if you can hear, if you can pull that out, but it's quite obvious. You have a group of, we'll call them drag activists, parading through some apparent pride event, chanting, "We're here, we're queer, we're coming for your children." Seems kind of obvious to me, doesn't it? But we're told that if we oppose this, well, we hate trans people. Now, I hate those people that are coming for our children. And of course, many of these events, again, pornographic doesn't begin to describe it. That particular march, there was at least one woman, pretty much had her chest exposed. She had little pasties on. There's another one where you've got naked men exposing themselves during these pride events. Are these what they're trying to come for our children? Because they were doing this in front of children. Now, I don't know about you. Seems to me that exposing yourself in public, at least it used to be a crime. Maybe it's one of those crimes they don't bother punishing anymore because we've completely socially engineered the concept of modesty out of a group of people. Now, during events in New York City, Seattle, and Toronto this past weekend, how can I say it? These sexual exploits, these nudists, furries, and other fetishists were not only gathering and parading, they were doing it in front of children. And in so many cases, it wasn't simply that children were present. It was designed for children. In fact, in Wisconsin, children participated. We've been socially engineered to display perversity. Remember, I said I'm not playing the euphemism game. This is not a pride parade. This was a public nudity parade. You know, again, in violation, I'm sure, of certain state and municipal laws. But we're not going to say anything because, well, then people would think we're anti-trans. No, I'm really anti-people treating children this way, treating me this way. Why, going down the street on a Sunday weekend afternoon, should I be forced to encounter something that we don't want to see? Now, I understand in a society, there are going to be things we want to see. Have we fallen to the point where perverts riding bicycles naked in a parade, where trans activists and perverts can openly say, "We are coming for your children," and people do nothing? See, it's one thing, it's that whole, the social engineering. We just want to be accepted, except it never stops there. It comes from expected, exploited, to you must affirm this, or you're treated as evil. You know what I call evil? The only thing worse than seeing a naked man riding a bike down the street in a parade intentionally in front of children is watching the society around cheer rather than have that man walked away in handcuffs. That's really the frightening part. That we've fallen to the point where we've been socially engineered out of any sort of logic or reason. Take, for example, Bud Light. Now, I don't know what this engineering executive, advertising executive came up with that thought it would be a pretty good idea to piss off your main customer base. Except this idea that we need to change them. See, it's the arrogance of it. We need to change them. Rather than saying, these are our customers, how do we entice them to buy our product? No. We need to change their mind. It's another form of social engineering. And this one blew up in their face. Same with Target. Same with the Dodgers. And by the way, I've been an auto racing fan my entire life. You know why I walked away from NASCAR? First, because they were getting stupid with the rules. And it was shortly thereafter that they started embracing some of this nonsense. I won't do anything NASCAR, which is sad. I used to love Richard Petty, Mark Martin, Davey Allison. These were my heroes when I was a child. Mark Martin, when I was older, he was a driver I always rooted for. I wept when Adam Petty died because he was a Petty. He was part of the dynasty. I followed them. And to see that NASCAR, this sport that was brought up around good old boys and moonshine running and race cars, turned into a social engineering tool. I wouldn't follow it. I won't watch them. I won't go to any of the events. So when I see Bud Light try to say, win back the people they pissed off with their what do they call them? The Bud Light Night, the Bud Night. Maybe we'll get them back. I'm sorry. You've pissed off, I think you've pissed off too many people. But this idea that we're being socially engineered to accept the evil, the macabre, the perverted, and consider it normal. I just have pictures in my head of the fall of the Roman Empire. With their own, with orgies and perversion. And that's not to say there aren't people that are standing up and saying, no, we ain't doing that. But for example, in Tennessee, a group of transgender people tried to get the courts to force Tennessee to change their birth certificate, to pretend that men were born, boys were born girls, and girls were born boys. Well, thankfully, a federal judge dismissed the lawsuit. Judge Eli Richardson entered a decision where he said that it was not up to the court to say what Tennessee's policy should be. So, hey, I live in Tennessee where they're not stupid enough to pretend that your sex changes because you think so. And I'm thankful that we've got a judge that recognizes that and was willing to support that. But then I saw another one. And maybe this explains why we have such a gross subculture that is rising and gaining popularity in our nation. See, Matt Walsh has got a new Twitter thread going. And, let him sum it up. He said, the transgender agenda was invented by pedophiliac psychologists, degenerate quacks, lunatic sexologists, literal Nazi scientists, and other assorted deviants. A collection of the most despicable monsters imaginable came up with all this stuff. Here are five names you should know. So if Matt Walsh is reporting that these people came up with this whole transgender agenda. He says, John Money pioneered the concept of gender identity. He tried out his theory on twin boys who he abused and experimented on throughout their childhood. Both went on to kill themselves. I hadn't heard of him. I've heard of Alfred Kinsey, though. See, he's the godfather of modern, quote, comprehensive sex ed programs. You know, the ones that keep pushing in schools. He came up with many of the theories of sexuality that are not taught as fact in our schools. He also enlisted a pedophile who raped children so he could document their victims' orgasms. Then you've got Volkmar Sigusch. He was a sexologist that coined the term cissexual. He argued in favor of exposing children to pornography and insisted that pedophilia should not be stigmatized. This latter point was a common belief among many pioneers of the trans movement. And Magnus Hirschfeld, another German sexologist, he opened one of the world's first transgender clinics. He was an avid proponent of eugenics and believed in forcibly sterilizing those who were feeble-minded. The Nazis would later take those eugenics things on and, well, implement them on a massive scale. You've got Erwin Gorbant. He was a leading scientist in Nazi Germany. He performed one of the first sex reassignment surgeries. He helped design human experiments that were carried out on prisoners in Dachau. In one experiment, victims were submerged in ice-cold water to study the effects of hypothermia. Many of them died. Mount goes on to say, this is far from a comprehensive list, but see, these are the sorts of people who gave us this ideology, a brutal, depraved, pseudoscientific movement from the very beginning, an ideology pushed by monstrous quacks and dangerous perverts. I guess some things never change. Maybe that explains the chants. We're here, we're queer, we're coming for your children. They're just going on with what many of the people who started the trans movement were already doing, abusing young children. Maybe they're just continuing the history of the perversion, the sexual exploitation of people, and using that in many ways to take down societies. Do you understand now why I refuse to bow to these perverts? To use plural pronouns for an individual? To pretend a man is a woman, a boy is a girl? I will not feed into that. No, I will stand. Throw slings, throw arrows, but I will stand. Because if there are some group of people I do not want to be associated with, it's that group that Matt Walsh pointed out. Now, listen, I have to take another break. Before I go, though, you know, I stop at AmericaOutLoud.com every day for news and information. I suggest you do the same. But do like I do. Don't just stop by. Share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos. Share this information. Expose others to what is going on. If we do that, then we all help to secure the blessings of liberty.
It was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that said, "Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime and departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time." America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're looking at the fact that we're being socially engineered. I think the evidence is quite substantial that there are those that are trying to change how we think. They're trying to engineer us. They think they know better, and they're trying to twist us to their twisted way of thinking. I remember back in the 70s as a child, we had the first wave feminists. At least that's what they call them now. And, you know, it was one thing to say, that maybe a second wave feminist, I forget which, but I remember the idea. Yeah, women, should women vote? Sure. Do women have rights to the same, to try for the same jobs? Absolutely. But I remember my father talking. We were sitting at the table and we were listening to the radio, and we had one of the I can't remember her name, one of the activists who was trying to argue that New York City, we were living in New York City at the time, that the city needed more female firefighters. And I remember my father getting fairly irate. And I have to understand, my father's 6'2". That time he's probably 220, 230 pounds. He's a big man. And you live in New York City, you live on like, we were living on the 22nd floor at the time. If there's a fire, he says, I don't care if it's a dude or a woman. I want someone that can pick me up and carry me down a flight of stairs, because that's what you need. And I remember the response that this person said when asked, you know, but what about the strength? What about the ability to pick them? He said, well, you could drag them by their heels. That way their head, you know, and leave their head near the floor where the air is better. And I'm like, you're going to drag somebody feet first down a flight of stairs, bouncing their head off the stairs on the way down? It was irrational. It was stupid. But it was never challenged on the radio. I only heard it challenged at the kitchen table. And that's kind of when I started getting the idea that people are stupid. It's an irrational statement. Now, again, should women be denied the opportunity to serve as firefighters? Absolutely not. I just think they should have to compete equally. It's this, we have to give people special privileges, because it says a couple of things. One is, we don't care if your work's any good. We only care if you're the right skin color, the right gender, the right whatever. Which also says, listen, we know that you're too stupid or too weak to get this job on your own. We have to help you. It's one of the reasons why the quota systems, I always thought, was so damaging to the very people they claim to help. Because now you have to wonder, did you actually get that degree from that university? Or did you get it on a quota? Were you passed along based on a quota? Now listen, when it was universities and stuff like that, that's bad enough. What happens when, well, it's the people that are supposed to be protecting our nation? See, there have been several military officers who have had their promotions held up by a single senator, Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama. Now, why has he blocked the confirmation of these officers? I mean, they were put forth by the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. Well, part of it was that Secretary of Defense said that military would fund out-of-state travel for female troops seeking abortion. And this kind of, well, it got to be a game of, I don't know, who's tougher between Tuberville and the Pentagon, and it isn't stopping. But the reason this one caught my attention is several of these candidates that were in line for promotion, well, they have a history of saying, making political statements and spearheading diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in the military based either on race or on sexuality. Now, that has to make me wonder. See, again, if we're going to send men and women to fight, possibly die, in defense of this nation, I don't want that being done by somebody who only got the job because they were the right color, or they had the right reproductive parts, or simply because they promoted the right political. I want people that know how to fight and know how to run a campaign. I don't want the best black officer. I want the best officer. If that person happens to be black, fine. But we've so muddled the water now that literally they're putting the defense of the nation, the defense of your safety, and how much more, based on a politically correct, we have to have the right skin color balance. We have to have the right gender balance. We have to have the right sex balance. Now listen, if you take your car in to get worked on, do you really care if the mechanic is male or female, black, white, yellow, red, green, pink, orange? Do you really care? Or do you just want to know that they have the skills so that your brakes work? That's the craziness. In this attempt to deal with racism, we've become a in many ways, an institutionally racist country. Yes, we have, because what we're talking about here in the Pentagon is the promotion of people who have a systematically racist point of view. They want to hire people based on their diversity, their equity, and their inclusion, not on their fitness, their skills, or their ability to lead. It's this whole idea to me is irrational, but that seems to be where we're going. That the not just the Pentagon, corporations. I have to wonder, the ad executive that did the Bud Light campaign with Dylan Mulvaney, the one that won an award for that campaign, were they a diversity hire? Could it be that they got that position, that they were allowed to put together that campaign, and that they got that award simply because they checked some diversity checkbox? Do you see where that leads us? So when I see a General Charles Brown, who is nominated to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, okay, but when I see that he ordered the Air Force's recruiting wing to cultivate an applicant pool that meets racial and gender percentage quotas, according to a memo. He literally told the Air and Space Forces magazine, he says, "I hire for diversity." Does that make you feel safer? Or how about this? The Supreme Court list of orders in this case, in the case of Ardoin, I think it's Ardoin versus Robinson, basically told the state of Louisiana, listen, you got to have at least 2 majority black congressional districts. See, the state of Louisiana was sued by Press Robinson and other black voters in the state. It was sent to the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. It eventually made its way up to the Supreme Court. And they basically said, we don't like Alabama's congressional map because they said that it impermissibly limited the voting power of African Americans, preventing the state from creating the creation of a majority black district. I don't know the details of the case. I don't know how gerrymandered this was. I don't know the details. But you know what's interesting? There's nothing in the Constitution that gives Congress the power to, or I should say the courts the power, to determine how a state apportions its or divvies up its state for members of the House. Now they say, well, you see, it violated the Voting Rights Act, but again, the Voting Rights Act, in order for it to be supreme law of the land, has to be made pursuant to the Constitution. And again, I understand what we dealt with was a racist agenda where blacks were effectively denied the right to vote. But aren't we just turning around going exactly the same way, saying now where you used to deny blacks the right to vote, now we're going to say they have to have so much representation in a specific district? Again, maybe I'm wrong, but is it really up to the courts to determine how a state organizes its congressional districts and how many of them have to be a majority of what color in order to satisfy that? I don't see it in the Constitution. But what I do see is, again, this social engineering to believe that it's the federal government that has to take care of everything. And that's the Supreme Court has to take care of everything. Just the general idea that Government has to do stuff for us. See, rather than being there to protect our rights, that government is there, well, to do stuff for us, to protect us from ourselves. For example, Connecticut Attorney General William Tong, he's launched a consumer protection investigation into Hyundai and Kia. Why? Well, hundreds of their vehicles have been stolen across the country. Now, why is Tong doing this investigation? I should say, what's he looking for? See, he thinks that the company has not put enough anti-theft parts into their cars. That the company decided, well, we're not going to put the anti-theft software or the other internal thing that will make these cars harder to steal. Do you think maybe they don't put them in there because these cars are sold to people who have lower income and maybe want a cheaper car? Maybe somebody looks and says, well, I could buy the car, the inexpensive car without security devices, or I could buy the expensive car with security devices. We're being socially engineered that the answer is not for people to decide, do I want the car without the advanced security in it or not? But we're trying. But Connecticut appears to be moving to say, we're going to force these car manufacturers to put the security devices we think should be in there, and price be damned. I mean, after all, if you can't afford it, well, that's your own problem. I wonder what would happen if this attorney general spent less time doing what he's not, what he's meddling in the manufacturing of cars, actually were to work on, oh, I don't know, prosecuting car thieves. Seems to me that that would be more in line with the role of an attorney general, is to make sure that not that the car manufacturers are being punished because people are stealing their cars, but punishing the people that are actually stealing their cars. Now you say, Paul, that's Connecticut, man, that's New England. They're crazy up there. How about Florida? Governor DeSantis just signed a bill, HB 637, that prohibits automakers from offering online sales direct to consumer. How many of you have seen advertisements say, cut out the middleman, go right to the manufacturer? You can't do that for a car in Florida. Well, unless you happen to be a Rivian, Polestar, Lucid, or Tesla. Yeah, Tesla and these other manufacturers, they, primary electric vehicle, by the way, they can sell directly to consumers. They don't have to go through car dealerships, which adds a lot of paperwork, it adds a lot of overhead, it adds a lot of price to your car. But you see, this is Florida. This is supposed to be the bastion of liberty in this country. But for some reason, they don't think you should be able to buy your car directly from Ford or Dodge or Chevrolet. You have to go through a dealership and add that layer of expense. Why? I've yet to see a good reason for that. But you see, we've been socially engineered to believe that government is there to do these things to protect us from ourselves because we're just too stupid to figure it out. You're not smart enough to figure out how to buy a car direct from the manufacturer. You're going to have to go through a dealer, son, because you're too stupid to do it on your own. That's all part of the social engineering. Whether it's the way we use words, the way we use language, or just the expectations that have been drilled into us from the time we were in school, we've been engineered to be a certain way. Here's the interesting thing. When you pull back the curtain and you see what's really going on, and you start realizing, I don't have to play their game. You know, they play stupid games, win stupid prizes. I don't have to play their stupid game. Doesn't mean it's easier, but it does make a difference in your life. You can live free in America. It just takes work. Well, if it's not free, it's not freedom. That's stupid. Freedom has cost the most precious lives in this nation's history. Isn't it worth maybe a little bit of inconvenience? Maybe being called a name or two? Or maybe just getting your head out of the sand and not listening to the idiots trying to push an agenda on you? Maybe willing to stand up and saying, no, that emperor is butt naked. And I'm not going to go wrong with it just because the crowd does. We need some more people like that. People willing to stand up and tell the truth in the face of all this social engineering. Now, hopefully I can get Dr. McMillan to join me and we'll have a very interesting interview. But if not, I want you to check out her article. Again, I'll have a link when this episode goes to podcast. But I want to ask you a question. I want you to think about this. If we don't stand up, then the perverts, the queers that are coming for our children, the ones that are riding naked through the streets in front of our children, the one that are putting on tighty-whities and twerking in front of our children, what are we teaching our children? Won't you stand up and help save them? Now, hopefully you'll come back. You'll join us at the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. As I've mentioned, all my shows go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them in your favorite podcast app, but do me a favor. Subscribe to the show. Leave me a rating or a review, especially on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the Constitution Study. You can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. But I ask you to do, as I always do, to share that information. Share the links, share the episodes, share the articles. Do more than just share information about the Constitution Study. Help us as we share the blessings of liberty to everyone in this great country, from sea to shining sea.